Are you just watching episode 47, Transcendence Part 1? Welcome to the podcast that shares critical thinking for the entertained Christian. I'm Eve Franklin.
And I'm Tim Martin.
And we've got a movie that's got so much to talk about that we're going to try and do it in two episodes.
I argued for a 12-part episode, but
We'd lose listenership because this isn't a podcast about transcendence.
So. There is so much to talk about.
Yes. This movie is packed full of things to talk about from a Christian worldview. And so we've already divided up our notes into two episodes, knowing that there was no way we could shove all of this discussion into 1 hour. So hopefully you guys will tune back in for our second episode, which will be released probably within a week or two of the first one.
So you know what I'd really like to see? I'd like to see them put comments in the episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, the show notes for this episode will be at areyoujustwatching.com/47. And the show notes for the second episode will be at areyoujustwatching.com/48, because they are going to be sequential.
Yay!
So anyway, in this one, we're going to start off, obviously, by giving our reactions to the movie. But before we do that, I want to play a little bit of the soundtrack. Now, that interesting piece of music was by Michael Dana. I'm hoping I'm saying his name right. He's famous for the soundtrack he did for Life of Pi, which I've understood you've seen, Tim. I haven't seen that movie.
Yes, I thought Life of Pi was a superb, well-done movie. It was very fantastical, too. So,
yeah, this soundtrack to me just was not very lyrical. You didn't walk around humming tunes after you watch the movie, which is kind of different from our last movie that we talked about, which was The Monument Men. It had the tune was overdone. It was repeated over and over and over again. This one doesn't have any tunes. So
Monument Men had a lot of John Philip Sousa type stuff in it.
Yeah, very marchy. That definitely set a mood. This one sets a mood too, because this is a very weird film and it has a very weird soundtrack. So.
Weird is a good word.
Okay, so what did we like or dislike? I liked the movie. It had good actors, Johnny Depp, Morgan Freeman, and even Kate Mara, who plays kind of a bad guy, but she's not. Well, like you said, there's really no huge bad or good in this movie. It's kind of all shades of gray. But
yeah, exactly. And I that plays into part of our discussion, too, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But I liked Kate Mara. I think she did a very good job in her role as the leader of the terrorist group. And I don't know that I've seen her anywhere else. I probably have. But she's got very memorable eyes. So
yeah, she looked familiar.
Yeah.
I'm not a Johnny Depp fan. I suspect that there's
probably...
That's
because
you're a guy. Yeah. Well, there's an element of, you know, envy and jealousy and... I mean, he's good looking. He can act. He's rich. Let's see. Everything that I shouldn't care about. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I am a big fan of Morgan Freeman, though.
Oh, yes. One of my favorite actors.
Although he didn't really seem to get into his role in here. He didn't seem to make it very different from the roles that he's done otherwise. Mm-hmm.
He's just Morgan Freeman. I mean.
Yeah. But let me jump right into one of the things, the thing that bugged me the most about this movie, and because I am in computer and networking, that they got so many things technologically wrong, it actually made it difficult for me.
Uh-huh.
There's little stuff, you know, that only a geek may notice, like there's a scene where it shows her collecting... pieces of the computer, the intelligent computer called PIN, and you watch her as she takes this stuff out, and I'd swear she's just taking out the CPU heat sinks, which are their sole purpose is to distribute heat. They have no processing, nothing.
Yeah.
But they looked really cool.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where the technological terrorist group, they're not really Luddites. They're not against technology, but they're against technology being used in certain ways. Where one guy gets nabbed in a coffee shop by the feds, and what does he do? He picks up his laptop and he smashes the screen. Okay.
Yeah, that scene caught me too. I thought that was really funny because anybody know? Well, I guess not. People who are not necessarily real techno savvy might not necessarily realize that the screen is not the processing part of the computer. I know there's a lot of really computer people who don't really know that, but
yeah,
you know,
I guess so.
with a laptop, you should know that the processing, but it was at least under the keyboard. So instead of smashing the screen part of the laptop, you at least want to smash the,
oh no, yeah. You criminal mastermind. Now I'll have to get a external monitor. Okay, the final thing that bugged me, and I know that you saw it too in your notes, Eve, was that somehow they managed to overcome the laws of physics and uploaded via satellite connection an entire human consciousness in less than a second.
Yeah, that really bugged me too. I mean, he'd barely just said that he had the software and could see the satellite and they cut the power to the facility. It's like, yeah, right.
And as you know, I went back and I did a little research on this and I found an article online from IO9 where they estimate that the memory capacity of the human brain is about 2.5 petabytes. Whew. Now, a petabyte is 1,000 terabytes. A terabyte is 1,000 megabytes. So, and
that's a lot of data.
Yes, it's a lot of data. It's like if you took all the academic databases in the entire world and put them together, it'd be about 2 petabytes.
Wow.
Now, over a satellite connection of 10 megabits per second, it would take 555,555 hours to upload a human consciousness. So, I don't think teleportation's in our future either.
No, no. There's parts of this movie where you just have to suspend your disbelief because there's no way it could really happen.
Yeah, and it, frankly, this movie is a lot more about message.
Yes.
It's a lot more about what they want to say than it is about getting the technology right. And I'm okay with
that. Yeah, we do it all the time when we watch sci-fi. I mean,
yeah.
To be honest, there's very little in Star Wars that you could point at and go, oh, that's the way it really works.
Yeah. Why didn't Boba Fett fly here when he can fly over here? One of the other things that sort of bugged me during the watching of the movie, but it ties back to that, you know, they're using it as a vehicle to tell the story, is they used a lot of cliches and tropes in the movie.
Yeah.
One of the ones that really bugged me was at the end, and I'll talk about it after we get past the no spoilers section.
Well, one of the things we both noticed, and we'll go back to briefly our discussion of actors, because we both love Johnny Depp, Morgan Freeman, and Kate Mara, but there's an FBI agent in this movie that is played by none other than the Scarecrow from Dark Knight. Is that where what movie
yeah.
he's in?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know what his real name is, but he is and always will be Scarecrow. So seeing him, I kept expecting him to be the bad guy and break out into some kind of weird, wacky stuff.
Well, in a way, he was the bad guy. He represented the government.
Yeah. Yeah. If there was a bad guy in this movie, I guess he the terrorists would be first of all, but yeah.
You know, it actually, the terrorists, and this isn't a big enough topic to go into full discussion on, but one of the things that always interests me is the difference between terrorist and freedom fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look back at the American Revolution, the founding fathers, the revolutionaries were all called, they were called terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
And in this movie, you know, the terrorist in the beginning of the movie, at the end of the movie, you're wondering, are they terrorists or were they right?
I think that to me, That's one of the things that this movie does very well, is that it doesn't have this very definite black and white, who the good guy is, who the bad guy is. You're left guessing, because when you watch the previews, it really sets you up to see what they make out of Will, this artificial intelligence, to be. They set you up, even in just watching the previews for the movie, to think of it as something bad and creepy and wrong. And so when you watch the movie, you're already predisposed to believe that. And I really feel like the way they deal with the terrorists and the government and everything that's going on is they try and keep you guessing as to where the bad and where the good is. I think they did that on purpose. I think it was very well done.
Yeah, they seem to manage the expectations of the viewer through the promotional material. They probably do that for all of them. I just don't notice it.
Right, right. But yeah, I think that you were predisposed to think something, so that when you got to the end of the movie, you were then a little bit surprised in the outcome. To me, this movie was really a romance that was buried in a lot of techno, hyper-techno plots.
I find that interesting, because for me, Transcendence was a moral tale.
Mm-hmm.
And the romance was secondary.
Yeah, I think maybe they're trying to make movies that appeal to both genders so that the couples can sit down and both enjoy them.
Well, didn't they already draw in all the
women with Johnny
viewers
Depp?
With Johnny Depp? Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you said that, because I was going to go there and in the back of my mind, my head was going, "That's sexist. Don't say it."
Well, yeah, at least women viewers of my generation. I think the younger generation don't quite latch on to Johnny Depp like the ones in my generation do.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's definitely carries with him an audience. So, and he does kind of weird movies anyway. That's kind of like his thing. Alrighty. Well, there were some things in this movie that would make it not suitable for younger children. But if you want a full family-friendly review of this movie, we do encourage you to check out PluggedIn.com, since that's not really the point of this podcast. But I do recall there being some bad words in this movie. There was also not necessarily a sex scene, but a dream of a sex scene. So there is a little bit of sexual content. There's lots of violence. Just check it out with them before you sit your kids down to watch it. So,
mm-hmm. I'm a student of your work. An admirer, really. The way you wrestle with the tension between technology's promise and its peril. Most men of science are blind to it.
Okay. If you've seen this movie, and I hope you have, because obviously listening to this podcast would be very difficult if you haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, we're going to spoil it.
Well, it's not so much a matter of spoiling, but to set the basis for what's going on in this movie, if you saw it, obviously, there was that whole setup at the beginning where these terrorists were wiping out AI labs by killing people, and they come at this one scientist with this topic about wrestling with technology's promise and its peril. It almost seems to me that these terrorists may not necessarily, I don't know, they don't value human life, obviously. Their ethics.
Definitely agreed, yeah.
Yeah, their ethics seem a little bit off center, because they're so concerned about what technology is doing, but they're willing to sacrifice people, which it seems like they're putting people above technology, but yet they're willing to sacrifice people to get rid of technology. That's kind of an interesting dilemma there. But
I think what they're doing is they're putting that old Spock axiom, the lives of the many outweigh the lives of the few or the one.
Yeah.
And I even, for the viewers at home, I even had my hand in the live long and prosper when I said that. and they were killing off the researchers in order to
prevent the research, stop the research. Yeah.
Which they felt would kill off humanity.
Yeah. I don't know. It seemed bad to me that she then approaches the scientist and talks to him about his ethics. when she obviously doesn't have much in the way of ethics, but
yeah, she seems to be lacking of an ability to tell right from wrong.
Oh, and that, you know, that comes in very, that's a very important thing in this movie. Yes. Be able to tell right from wrong. Now, the ethics that she's talking about here, I just find it very interesting that she talks about men of science being blind to attention there. And I think this is one of these instances we have a problem with in our society. We have this white coat mentality where somebody has a lot of initials after their name, and they suddenly have all the authority in the world to tell you whatever they want you to believe, and you're supposed to believe it because they have the initials after their name and wear a white coat, white lab coat. We definitely have a generation, several generations of people who have been raised to just trust without any doubt anything that they're told by a scientist. And I think that gives them kind of God complexes. It's like they can think or do or say whatever they want, and they don't even necessarily have to back it up with good science. They just have to be a scientist, and suddenly their word is law.
I think it's even more than that, though, Eve. I think that that there are scientists out there. Neil deGrasse Tyson comes to mind, who their science is the law to them.
Yeah,
and they don't. They have absolutely no doubt about it. So when they say it, they're not saying it like they're God and they're stating what they believe. They're just stating what they believe is fact. Just like when I say Christ died on the cross and bore my sins,
mm-hmm.
they're saying there is no God, and they believe it with the same certainty.
Mm-hmm. But that gives them a certain level of arrogance and authority that blinds them. And I agree with her. There is a blindness there. It blinds them to thinking that is outside of their brand of box, basically. So yeah, I think it was a very interesting statement, even though I'm not necessarily sure I agree with the position that this particular terrorist takes in this movie. I think that it was very interesting that she raises a question that I actually do agree with.
It's particularly interesting when you take into account the all the greatest early scientists, Newton,
mm-hmm.
Pascal, even
Galileo.
Yeah. When you consider some of the greatest early philosophers,
mm-hmm.
That they all had very heavy elements of theology in there too.
Mm-hmm.
And now theology is held completely separate. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if there's a correlation between that lack of the importance of theology in the scientific community and that element of God complex.
Right, right. Yeah, and to be honest, and we'll discuss this more in the second episode on this movie, that there's this tendency to create gods for ourselves because we don't have, I think scientists kind of work around that by creating their own gods. They don't even realize they're gods, but they give them the power of God to other things. And it's like time and chance suddenly has this godlike ability to create.
It's scary how much comes back to one version or another of idolatry.
Right, right. Now, there's another quote.
Machines are meant to aid the human mind, not supplant it.
They're your words.
This quote's really interesting because this is a scientist who's sensitive to the debate. And one of the things that I think is very interesting is technology is one of those things. It's a tool, and it's like fire. It's like fire can warm you. It can warm a house. It can cook food, or it can destroy. It can be used as a destructive thing that, you know, burn houses down and burn people, and there's all kinds of horrible things that can be done with fire. But in the end, it's just a tool. In and of itself, it's not good or evil. I really see technology as being like that, that it's not evil, but what you do with it can be evil.
Absolutely. It's for me, it's never been anything other than just another tool with which humanity can express their will.
Maybe it was all inevitable. an unavoidable collision between mankind and technology.
And when you're looking at how it's a tool, I mean, when they came out with the wheel or the hammer or, you know, sliced bread, did people look at it and say there is an inevitable collision, unavoidable collision between the bread slicer and mankind coming up?
Yeah.
It all depends on human nature, humanity's tendency to use that tool. Because human nature is sinful, it's always mm-hmm. going to be used to try and take the place of God.
Yeah. In 1 Corinthians 10:31, it says, "So whatever you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God." I think there's nothing in the Bible that speaks directly to technology, but there's a lot of things, a lot of ways that you can read into it, tool use. And I think that as people living in a technological environment, I know a lot of Christians are really adverse, like, to using Facebook or to using audio video in churches. And I imagine none of them will be listening to our podcast, because this is a kind of a technological advance that a lot of Christians probably haven't even accessed. But this kind of anti-technology feel that sometimes gets correlated to a Christian worldview is so not really where we are as people who believe in God. And we just believe that what we do, no matter what we do, our actions and what people see of us should portray Christ.
Yep.
And if that's in an online environment, then it should be portraying God in Christ in an online environment.
Yeah, absolutely. You referenced earlier, and I think I've used this scripture before, Colossians 3:23 and 24. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive your inheritance as your reward. You mm-hmm. are serving the Lord Christ. And that applies to if you're swinging a hammer or if you're pounding out a keyboard.
And in 1 Corinthians 6:12, it says, "All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be enslaved by anything." So this is another reminder that as Christians, we are allowed basically to do anything inside the will of the Lord. But we have to make sure that when we're saying that it's lawful, whether it's helpful, and no, second of all, not letting it take control of our life, because God is supposed to be number one. And usually our relationships with our spouse and family should be number two. Technology should come way down the list.
Yep.
So I think that there is an unavoidable collision possibly between mankind and technology, because it opens so many doors to us. It gives us access to information. I mean, information is so easy to come by nowadays. And because of that, it means there's that greater necessity for us to guard ourselves against temptation. I mean, you can go online and gamble now. You can go online and see pornography. It opens up all these doors to things that we really shouldn't avail ourselves of.
I sort of disagree, in as much as it's the collision between mankind and his own nature. Technology yeah. just makes it easier for mankind to pursue that right. That sinful nature.
Yeah. Yeah, well, definitely.
It would certainly be a lot harder to view pornography if we turned off all the power.
But yeah, it's an interesting discussion, and I think it goes way beyond what they carry in this movie. I mean, in this movie, they're just making it sound like it's kind of that Terminator complex. If we create artificial intelligence, it's going to take over the world. It's going to be smarter than us and decide the world's a better place without us. And that's what happened in Terminator. And I think that's kind of what they're implying in this movie, that they're fearful of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole Skynet paradox.
Yeah, the whole Skynet. And actually, that was in Asimov's robot series as well. I don't know whether I read
the short stories, the iRobot short stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he created if you read the whole robot series, he created a robot that created a zeroth law, where he put mankind ahead of man, so that the rules of robotics, where they a robot could not allow, by action or inaction, a human to come to harm. And that the robot actually pre-programmed itself to create a law that came before that law, where it, by inaction or action, it could not allow humanity to come to harm. So it would put humanity, the greater good of humanity, past, present, and future, above the any particular individual person that was. And they were able to get around the rules of robot, the laws of robotics, by putting humanity. And they did that in iRobot, the movie. That was the central brain thing kind of went crazy.
Yeah, they tied that into the movie. I don't think I'd ever heard of the Zeroth Law before this. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. Yeah. Now I'm going to have to go back and watch it again.
But that's a little, I mean, that's kind of like everything that deals with artificial intelligence usually comes back to the idea is that if we make it smarter than us, it's going to figure out that the world's a better place without us. And I don't know whether that's necessarily true. I don't know. That would necessitate the created doing away with the creator.
Yeah. It. And really, what would the world be like without the if you took away humanity altogether?
And, yeah.
All that's left are animals and
technology.
Technology. Is it still the same world? Really? I mean, even if you were to take God out of the picture altogether, what would be left? What would be expressing free will?
Yeah. It's kind of a weird paradox that we would create something that would do away with us. I don't know. I mean, it's generally a science fiction topic that you see a lot, but I don't know that it could ever actually happen. It's just interesting. I guess it gives them interesting stepping stones to work in their themes and their thoughts.
It's great fodder for conflict.
Right. And it works very well even in this movie. So we're talking about it. Now, this is a bit of humor I wanted to insert.
You've got terrible handwriting.
I haven't handwritten anything since I was at school. But it was the only secure way I could think of reaching you.
Okay, that one really caught my attention because we're talking about a scientist here who's trying to communicate out off the grid. And he's never had to write anything since he was at school. And it tickled my funny bone because technology has changed so much the way we educate our children. And I've heard that there's even schools now who are thinking about taking handwriting off of the curriculum because it's not necessary anymore. Kids type their papers on computers and take notes on their mobile devices, and they just don't write anymore. And I think I heard the debate is that if they can't write cursive, then they can't read cursive, and it would prevent them from reading historical documents, which makes a lot of good points. But what if we teach our kids how to write, and then we have, you know, Armageddon, and all of the computers in the world go down, and they have no way to communicate because they don't know how to write?
Well, it's honestly, I suspect that kids will always learn how to write simply so they can pass notes in class.
Yeah, that's true. Of course, nowadays they text.
Now you could do text. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep, yep.
And the writing will be LOL.
Yeah, it's really bad. I remember reading, I think it was The Little House on the Prairie, but it may have been other books, where they were talking about children in these one-room schoolhouses back in the early era of the United States, and that they were learning to do long arithmetic in their heads, you know, like long division. And nowadays, you know, kids simply use a calculator for that kind of stuff, where they write it out on paper. And
yeah.
It's amazing how technology has changed the way we learn.
All my kids had to have graphing calculators in high school math. And I don't handwrite either. It's although, you know, when I went through school, they were still teaching cursive.
Mm-hmm.
And although I was tempted to say something about teaching, you know, cuneiform. But I can't. I recently sat down to try and write cursive, and I can't do it anymore.
I can barely.
I can still read it. Oh, my signature doesn't look a thing like my name.
Me too. I was like, I would have made a great doctor. I've always, ever since I got out of school, I've always printed. I don't write in cursive. I can read it just fine, but I never was a big fan of cursive. That was one of the few bad grades I would get in school, was cursive handwriting.
I'll be interested in knowing, you know, maybe 50 or 100 years down the road, if they can look back and say, and that's when the decline of humanity started, was when kids stopped learning cursive in school.
Yeah, yeah.
The effort to develop a strong artificial intelligence has led to significant advancements in the field of neural engineering, as well as our understanding of the human brain. But while some focus on the still distant dream of a thinking computer, I believe the journey to be more important than the destination. My priority is to use my colleagues' accidental insights to develop new methods for the early detection of cancer and in the hopes of finding a cure for Alzheimer's.
We kind of had our lighthearted play here, but this is this little bit about the research. I think this is actually a very good application of AI technology, to use it to research the brain and how it works. I don't know that we could ever manufacture something as intricate and complex as the human brain, but if we get close, it at least gives us something to test theories on without, you know,
yeah,
playing with real people. So
yeah, speaking as somebody who both my parents have multiple sclerosis, which is a neurological condition that affects the mylar, mm-hmm. on the nerves, and we have a history of Alzheimer's. I watch these developments in technology and am encouraged by what we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't think that we'll be anywhere. I question whether we will ever approach the level of complexity that we see in the human brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't think we even understand the half of it. I mean, there's theories that say we don't even use all of our brains. I think we use enough of our brains. I think God built a lot of redundancy into our systems. I think there's a lot of studies that show brain injuries where people have actually learned around the injury and almost gotten back to what they were before the injury, even though part of their brain is dead. That's a very good indication that there's a lot of redundancy in the human brain that allows us to heal and still function, even though parts of it are hurt. And it's just really fascinating. It gives me a really greater appreciation for a God as a creator when you look into the complexity of the human brain.
Just tell Joseph that I've spent my entire life in a computer lab. Decided I'd rather spend the rest of it with you.
This kind of almost takes us back to previous discussions we've had when we talked about After Earth. There was the father who had spent so much time in his military career that he kind of lost his family. It seems to be an ongoing thing that comes up a lot in movies, that this whole idea of putting your work ahead of everything else, so that at one point you just turn around and look and go, was that really all that important?
Yeah, not just in movies. I mean, yeah. We see it in real life all the time.
Yeah, it's why it's in the movies, because it is something that we all deal with, especially in a very busy society that we have today. It's like we get so busy, and you turn around and go, was it worth it? I mean, Will basically was one of the leading scientists in his field on artificial intelligence. But when he realizes he only has a month left to live, none of that is important to him anymore.
Yeah. And actually, I liked that, because it showed when he says it in the movie, I thought there was an ulterior motive. I was thinking, something's going to happen where he's going to work out, in secret. Something, and then it turns out, and spoiler alert for anybody listening, fast forward 30 seconds, it turns out that the entire upload your AI thing is instituted by his wife, mm-hmm. not by Will.
Right.
And Will agrees to it, but
he's doing it for her.
He's not the...
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not the instigator of the entire thing.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it definitely comes out that the whole thing was done for her. He agreed to it for her. It was not a... no power complex that he was on. It was just, you know, if this makes her happy, then we'll do it, you know. Willing to give up the last week or so of his life being basically uploaded into a computer is kind of a huge sacrifice, if you think about it.
Sacrifice. That's an interesting word.
Yeah, I think it's going to come up again and again in our discussions.
I do want to say that that one line where he wants to spend the rest of his life with his wife, mm-hmm. Really speaks a lot to how you examine his post upload character,
mm-hmm.
and it works well to tying everything together at the end for me.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly after the last couple lines that Eve and Will have together.
Right. Right. Now this is, I know we were in a discussion on technology. The reason why I brought this up is because technology, as we've already said, is a tool, and it is, and you give it a certain control over your life. And in this instance, at this point where he makes this quote, he's deciding to turn his back on technology, even though it's what he's based his whole life on. Instead of trying to spend that last month trying to make that last breakthrough that's going to, you know, make him infamous, he doesn't care about it anymore. It's like a totally different perspective when he realizes that he's about to die. So he puts technology back where it belongs, in the shuffle deck of priorities.
He seemed to have his priorities in the right order there.
Yes, definitely. I think that's why I call this a romance buried under techno plots, because he really is a man who loves his wife first and foremost. And that really comes through.
The only way to stop it is to shut down the internet. Basically cut power to every networked hard drive on Earth. It's Y2K.
Right. And why do we need the terrorists?
We're all gonna need someone to blame. This thing goes sideways.
Okay, now both of us have lived through Y2K.
Yes. Some of us worked through it.
It was such a panic going right up until the very last minute. I remember there were people who actually thought that the technology was just going to shut down and the world was going to end.
True story. I had to put Y2K compliance stickers on coffee makers.
And I remember, because my dad's been a very big computer guy. I was raised with computers before computers even existed. He was building computers back before you could buy them. And so I was of the generation that was prior to the generation raised on computers, but I was raised on computers. And so he was scoffing at this whole Y2K panic long before Y2K happened, because he was just like, "This, it's ridiculous." He says, yeah, some computers might have a little bit of a date problem, but it's not going to shut down, you know, the world's banking systems. You know, it's not going to create all of this havoc. And that's what it turned out to be. It wasn't that big of a deal. Now, this movie actually shows what a Y2K would have really been like if it had been real. What would happen if all the computers shut down and there's no power and there's no nothing?
You know, maybe it's our generation, but I really have to say that our generation would go back to the stubby pencil method.
Yeah.
Without much difficulty, because even though, you know, I've been using computers since before I turned 10.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I may never have done something without a computer, I certainly know where to find the information.
Yeah.
I can still use a library card catalog.
Yeah. Yeah, but the problem is that the libraries got rid of all their library cards.
Yeah, true. They don't have those drawers anymore, do they?
Nope. So yeah, the information would be there. You might have might be a little harder to find because there's no links to tie it all together. You can still find the books, but you know the card catalogs might have already been burned.
Well, you know, heat and warmth.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's an interesting premise. I think that they really go for the shock value at the beginning of this movie, where they're showing, you know, the flash forward, where you're seeing people using their, you know, like their keyboards to as door stoppers and that kind of stuff. I think it would be different. No matter how many times we view what the world would look like without technology, I just think that we just haven't a clue. We just don't really know what it would look like and what would happen. I think all of those visions of how people would deal with it are completely wrong. But we won't know what it would really look like until it happens.
Yeah, the narrative framing for Transcendence, they say something like, I heard there's partial phone service in Denver and they have electricity in New York City or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I get what they were saying, you know, what they're trying to drive home about how widespread the impact of the drastic impact of the actions they take throughout the movie are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they were using creative hyperbole there.
Yeah. Now, the other end of that quote was about, you know, why do we need the terrorists to help? And I thought it was really funny is that we'll need someone to blame. So
yeah,
it is going to be something that was going to be world changing. And so they knew they had to blame it on somebody and they didn't want the government to take the rap for it.
And, you know, they didn't release that didn't come back up in again in that framing narrative.
No, it didn't.
They never talk about how it happened. And they never blame the terrorists. I didn't realize that, but that's interesting.
Well, you know, when you shut down all communication, that instant need to know is kind of destroyed anyway. I mean, we know when terrorists act nowadays because we have YouTube and we have instant news and media.
Text alerts,
yeah. And the problem that with, you know, once everything, all the communication systems shut down is people's need to know becomes very local. You know, it's like the reason for why all the computers shut down is I'm sure there were people asking, but they were more interested in what happened to all my money because the banks, I can no longer access the bank and how I don't have power in my house. So how am I going to cook my food? And, you know, things like that are a lot more immediate and important than why did it happen? I guess if technology suddenly shuts down, we'll find out how people really react. Now, the point of the terrorists, let's kind of wrap this around to our next discussion, is they wanted humanity to evolve without technology. I actually thought there was a lot of stuff about evolution in this movie that really caught my attention. And the whole terrorism thing of wanting to evolve without technology is just kind of introduced the topic. But there's so much in this movie that really popped out to me. The first is this quote.
Tell me you're joking.
He recorded the monkey's brain activity and uploaded its consciousness like a song or a movie. Will's body is dying, but his mind is a pattern of electrical signals that we can upload into Penn.
He's not a monkey.
This one really struck me as informative because they are pointing out the fact that mankind is not a monkey. And yet at the same time, we're told by evolutionists over and over and over again that mankind is just another type of ape.
So. Yeah. It they seem to want to have their cake and eat it too in this
eat
case.
It too. Yeah.
There was just yet another story recently about a guy who's fighting for rights, human rights for chimpanzees, I think it is.
Yeah. It's like they give with one hand and then they take it away with the other. Mm-hmm. They can't seem to really apply that concept consistently. They want humans to be special, but at the same time, they want humans to just be monkeys and not be special. And it doesn't quite
work
that way.
Can't have it both ways, guys.
Yeah.
This thing is like any intelligence. It needs to grow to advance.
Now, this is one you wanted to talk about a bit. I remember that you had this in your notes, the whole intelligence needing to grow and to advance. But what really caught my attention on this is they were talking about expanding and evolving something that is created.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're, it's in the negative light. They're talking about expansion and evolving as suddenly this negativity, like there's something wrong about something wanting to survive and grow and take more power and become better. But isn't that the whole point of survival of the fittest?
Yeah, but that is exactly right. And the way they present it in the movie, in this particular quote, is they present it more like a virus or like a mildew or mold, you know, something that is completely without any hope of ever being sentient. as an element of life, that it's going to, it needs to grow and to advance.
Mm-hmm.
But this is so much more than that. I thought it was sort of tchitchky.
Well, the thing that bugs me about that is that evolutionists are never really consistent about their application of their philosophy to a workable worldview. They believe in survival of the fittest. They say that's how everything has evolved, is, you know, by the most fittest thing to survive is the one that survives. And that means that nature's red in tooth and claw. It's kind of a very famous quote. But there's a problem with that, because there's no morals attached to survival of the fittest. Whoever is the most fit, which means the strongest, sometimes the cruelest, sometimes the coldest, willing to make the most selfish decisions, are the ones that would survive, because they will kill out everything else, all the competition, right?
I think you're applying a moral lens,
but
a spiritual lens even.
But it is a moral lens, because when you're talking about something that is the fittest to survive in the purest sense of the word, then there, that's why I'm saying for evolutionists, they don't apply it consistently, because if they believe in the purest form of survival of the fittest, then it means the cruelest survives.
But survival of the fittest is, it's just the name of the theory behind it. And basically what it says is survival will always go to the one who lives.
Right.
And it doesn't talk about, you know, cruelty. It just talks about whichever creature has adapted with the – it has an adaptation that makes them more survivable. That's the one that's going to get passed on.
Right.
It's just like back in after Earth. Maybe the grass, you know, evolved to deal with the extreme temperatures at night. Well, how could it evolve to deal with the extreme temperatures at night if it dies every time?
Right, right. But there's nothing to pass on. Right. Well, the thing is that when you're putting organisms into competition with each other, the one that is most able to win competition wise is the one that's going to survive to reproduce. And when we're talking about, even in this instance, they're talking about an intelligence that is becoming dangerous because it can evolve and influence and take over the world. Well, that would be the ultimate survival, is the one that survives to reproduce or to be in control is the one that's most fit to survive. That is the purest meaning of that phrase. And so, but here they're advancing it as a negative, but yet that's the very, you know, underlying foundation to their whole philosophy.
Yeah.
That the one who survives is the one that is in control, that, that takes over, that is reproduces or whatever. It's inconsistent. And they borrow morality and restraint is not a part of evolution, and it's borrowed from other worldviews.
Yeah, I don't think they're presenting it as a negative. I think they're presenting it as something they believe to be a truism.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it is, because, you know, it puts aside the sovereignty of God.
Right, right. Well, to me, it just shows that there's holes in their philosophy. And
yeah, lots of them.
Lots of big holes in their philosophy.
Think it's really him?
Clearly his mind has evolved so radically, I'm not sure it matters anymore.
This is another one where they're talking about evolution and couched in a phrase of something that's not actually evolving, but is expanding from a created level. But it's very interesting that they're talking about the radical change, the personal growth, versus becoming more powerful. And they're now almost seeing his ability to grow and expand and become more powerful as an evil. Mm-hmm. And it just made me stop and think, it's like, so is this evil? Is this how evolutionists define evil?
It sort of ties back to that, trope quote, that cliche quote of power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely, which we know is not true, because the most powerful creature, the most powerful being in all of creation is completely without corruption.
Right.
But it comes back to that that whole trope thing, and I think humanity wants to see somebody who can force their will upon other people. They want to see that as a definition of evil, because humanity without control is to take away somebody's control is so wrong to do.
Mm-hmm. Right. They want that self realization where man is only what he is to himself, and he's responsible to himself. He's only responsible outside of himself, in that decisions he makes impacts others who are also responsible for themselves. And it's a really hard concept to wrap my mind around, because we know that mankind is naturally sinful and is naturally selfish. So all of those being responsible for oneself, it just breeds selfishness, in my opinion. So
yeah, it's you got to wonder about folks who don't believe in sin.
Right.
Not only don't believe in God, but don't believe that there's a concept of sin.
Mm-hmm.
And but they won't hesitate to use the word evil,
right?
Which is interesting in and of itself.
Yeah.
But I would not want to live with that worldview.
Right.
I am much happier understanding that people are just messed up.
The end of primitive organic life. In the dawn of a more advanced age, everything will exist just to serve its intelligence.
Now, what I found so interesting about that is that Will is changing the world by basically spreading nanites throughout the world and taking over on a technological sense. So it's kind of the end of organic life, as they said. But is organic life the penultimate of evolution? I mean, if we as people limit, I guess, well, it's more of a naturalistic worldview. If that's the limit, we can't allow a supernatural foot in the door, as was famously said, but we can also not allow a technological foot in the door. We just have to, all answers have to be organic, physical, organic, and not have any other influences. It seems a very narrow, closed-minded view of the world.
Yeah, it's like as soon as we introduce medical machines, we no longer are us anymore. We're something else entirely.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, we'll touch more on this in the next episode. But I really thought that they really pulled out at the end of the movie that what Will was doing with the nanites was good for the environment. He was trying to heal and fix things, and they were seeing it as a threat because it was no longer organic.
Yeah, at the end of the movie, you're really left questioning whether
who was,
or not
who was right.
Not only who was right, but whose lens were you viewing the entire story through as you watched it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because if the story had been told from the point of view of Will Caster, I think it would have been a very different story. He would have been, the protagonist. He would have been the one that all of the evil people came against.
Right.
If it had been from his point of view. But instead, we're viewing it from
Evelyn.
The viewpoint of Eve. Evelyn. And the viewpoint of Max, and the viewpoint of Joseph and the FBI.
Yeah, there's a lot of different
views. All of whom have incomplete concepts of what's
like
going on.
Blind men trying to explain what an elephant looks like.
I love that joke.
Now, this last quote, this is from Will.
It's what I wanted you to see. It's regeneration. It's evolution.
And I thought this was so hilarious because we walk into this purely technological factory where he's creating organic pieces, not even life, but organic pieces. And he says, I wanted you to see it. See this. It's evolution. And I nearly died laughing because that is like the biggest misuse of the term and principle of evolution in the entire movie. And probably evolutionists are rolling in their graves. They believe they ended when they died, so possibly not. But anyway, he's in a factory where nanorganic life is being manufactured, and he's calling it evolution. They're showing something being created and calling it evolution.
I was just looking up the etymology of the word evolution, and it comes from the Latin word evolution, meaning unrolling, to evolve. Yeah, it's almost like they wanted to be using the word here to tie it back to the theory, but not.
Yeah.
It just was a wrong choice.
Right. Right. And the weird thing is that, and this is kind of a shortcoming of evolution as a science, is they constantly want to demonstrate evolution, the evolving of something, but they can never do it without some level of creation being involved. I remember this, I think it was back in maybe the late 80s or early 90s, they had this big thing about where they had created an evolving program on a computer, and it was supposed to like go through the steps of evolution. And what they were saying, oh, this is so cool, we're showing evolution on a computer. And it's like, no, you programmed the computer, you created the program, you set the variables of how the change occurs and when it occurs. Everything about that program was created.
Call it intelligent design.
Intelligent design, yes. And in fact, if you go back even to the earliest experiments with trying to create life, they were creating life. They weren't showing how life could arise by chance. They were actually in a science laboratory trying to create life. Trying to create the amino acids that they considered the basis for life, and they were creating it in a controlled environment. Well, that's not evolution. That's not even happening by chance. It's being created. So all of the instances that we have ever tried to demonstrate evolution, it's always been actually man-involved, intelligence-directed. Mm-hmm. It's creation. And so we've never actually been able to, in a laboratory, demonstrate evolution because we've always been directing it. So, setting parameters.
That's such a big topic.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge topic. In Genesis 1:25, it says, God made the wild animals according to their kinds, livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. And if you go back into verses 12 and 21, he talks about the plants and the water, creatures that live in the water and the creatures that fly in the same terminology of kinds. And one of the things that evolutionists always come against creationists on is the topic of what a kind is. God created each kind to have the variable data necessary to expand and grow and adapt within the parameters of that biological kind. And that actually makes sense of what we see biologically, that there are distinct barriers between various kinds of animals, that they don't cross over. You don't see a cat becoming a dog or a giraffe becoming an elephant. There's distinct barriers. They can grow and diversify within inside those barriers because God created the original kind with the ability to reproduce after their kind in a wide variety of things. And so I think that that makes a lot more sense of what we actually see than this idea of saying that things change and evolve without any direction. And we definitely see direction in what we see in the world of biology adapting and moving. So it, to me, that just, I just thought it was funny that they had to take that whole concept of evolution and apply it in, well, really was the biggest misuse of the term possible.
Yeah, this is definitely just a case where they're using it as a vehicle for conflict. They're using it as a general understanding to tell the story.
And they're using it wrong.
Not as... I don't think that this movie can be put forward as an argument against evolution, per se, as much as an argument against how evolution is perceived and used. The concept of evolution is perceived and used. That's, that said, God created everything.
Yes. Now, we've actually come to the conclusion of our notes, and I think probably our time for the first episode on Transcendence. We've got a ton of really important stuff still to discuss. So we really hope that, number one, you will come and comment, though your comments will not come into our next episode because we're going to turn around and record it right now. We do want to know what you thought of this movie and the topics we just discussed on technology and evolution and what you thought of the movie. We'd love to hear what other people think about this movie. You can comment on the show.
Yes,
we can comment on the show notes, which are at areyoujustwatching.com/47. And you can also call and leave us voicemail at 903-231-2221. You can also email us at feedback@areyoujustwatching.com, and we welcome audio files because we want to hear a verbal audio feedback that we can even play on the show. That would be so cool. We'd love to hear from
That'd
you guys.
Be great.
Yes, please, 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 please. And if nothing else, like us on Facebook, subscribe to the podcast, get involved. We're kind of creating this in a vacuum, and we want our listeners involved.
Yeah, it's, if you look at our post history, you'll see that Eve and I both like arguing. Well, you know, energetic discussions. So please, you know, get into it with us.
Yes.
We'd be happy to talk.
Yeah, obviously. We talk a lot. So yeah, please do check back on many of the different ways. Do make sure you tune back in to our next episode to hear our continuing discussion, because we are going to talk about sentience, soul, and created gods.
And so, this is the one that's going to be so much fun.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. So do come back, and thanks for listening. I'm Eve Franklin.
I'm Tim Martin.
And don't just watch.
Are You Just Watching is a proud member of the Noodle Mix Network at noodle.mx. Our opening vocal talent was thanks to Mariah. The theme song is used courtesy of Answers in Genesis. For more great podcasts like this one, visit the Noodle Mix Network at noodle.mx. That's noodle.mx.